بسم الله بسم الله والحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. So we're gonna pick up where we left off last time with the first chapter, Surah Fatiha. How has it been going for people who have been trying to memorize or kind of pick it up? Has anybody been able to memorize the first few verses? Yeah, you have? No? Why did you raise your hand?
I haven't, but I feel like when I try to say it, it's going to happen.
Yeah? You did?
I think I have it, yeah.
Yeah? How's it going for you?
So far, so good.
Really? Amazing. Do you want to say it first?
Try it?
Yeah. Let's hear it.
Allahu Akbar.
It's okay.
I haven't done it in public before.
Well, why don't we do this?
Yeah.
Just because I don't want to put people on the spot. Maybe we could take a quick minute, because I know everyone doesn't know everyone else. If you can turn to the persons next to you, maybe introduce yourself. Talk about how did your Eid go? I know for some of you it was your first Eid. And for some, it's one of many Eids you've experienced. And if you feel up for it, maybe you can just talk to the person next to you. And if you're learning Fatiha, just kind of say to them, you know, where you're at on it thus far. And, you know, if you're comfortable saying what you've learned so far, or how that process has been going. And then we'll come back in like a few minutes and get started. Yeah, but go ahead.
Okay. So how was Eid for people? How did it go? Yeah? It was nice? Yeah. What did you guys do? Mine was crazy.
Yeah.
As always. Did I nap on the day? No, I didn't. The Eid nap is... I did not. Yeah. But, you know, one day soon. Yeah. Are you squinting at the board? Luna, you're wearing glasses? You can't see?
I know. I have
All right, bigger.
My eyes lady died during the
COVID. That's okay.
Okay, let's get back. We'll get started. So, how was Eid for people? What did you all do on Eid? Spend time with family? That's nice. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I fasted the day before. That was my first time fasting with like full fidelity.
Nice.
And that was a nice experience.
Yeah? What made it nice?
I guess the effort to restrain myself from certain things, even not listening to music, I think to music that day. And then abstaining from impure thoughts, just seeing how those things come in throughout the day, so being extra vigilant and mindful of those things. Experience of not eating, waking up early to eat. It was just a different mode of experience.
Amazing. Yeah, and that's one of the ideas, right? In the Quran, we talked about this going into Ramadan. When it talks about fasting, it says, لَعَلُّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ, so that perhaps you might obtain kind of God consciousness. But the idea isn't that you're just conscious of the thought, but you're conscious of your ability to be conscious of something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you see the difference in the two things? I'm not just like aware of what I'm eating or not eating, but I'm aware of my capacity to be aware. And I can contrapose that to moments where so much is done mindlessly. You know, I'm just throwing food in my mouth without thinking about it. I'm just like saying whatever comes out of my mouth, you know? So the capacity to be aware of your ability to be aware is kind of what the root of that is. Did anybody else fast the day before? Yeah, how was that for people? Yeah. I like when I ask a question and people just kind of smile and nod, but it means nothing. Like, you know, like it can mean 5 million different things. Do you know what I mean? It's like when a baby cries, I'm like, why is the baby crying? And it's the same thing as an adult. Just smile and nod. Yeah. Why are you smiling and nodding? Yes.
I was proud of myself for making food today. This is my first like summer fast.
Yeah.
And I was really worried about that. I was going to pass out, but it was actually not that bad. I fasted the day before, so it was, I guess, easier for for me to do the second day as well.
Nice.
Inshallah, next year it's going to like, do all 10, but you start with the 2 is good enough.
Inshallah. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
I fast. I couldn't go the whole time, but I had some prayers to catch up on, so I caught up on a bunch of prayers that day, so I felt really good about that.
Nice.
Yeah.
So. Inshallah. Yeah.
Like I said, the Wednesday, a couple Wednesdays ago, I was going to eat the paella for us, and I did it.
No, yeah.
I ate it for us.
Paella's cow feet. That's what he ate for us. Be grateful that you had someone eat that for you and you didn't have to eat it yourself.
You're welcome.
Yeah, go ahead.
I thought it was great. It was my first time ever fasting as well. And I feel like the mentality, like I came into it when I woke up in the morning was like, I'm going to eat and then it's like I'm going to do this. But like kind of like in like building my adrenaline in a way, like to make it through the day. But to be honest, the day felt like really calm and like sort of like speaking what you said, like very aware of different things. So I didn't listen to music and I deleted my social media for the day as well. And then like, it was just a very like calming peace of mind.
Amazing. Yeah, and what we're also doing, right, is something that we'll talk about as we go through the remainder of this chapter today. We're going to try to get through all of Fatiha today, the first chapter. If you miss like the first few weeks, we have it all recorded. If I seem a little bit kind of like gasping, I don't know why I'm wheezing, but I'm wheezing. So forgive me for that if I'm not talking as fast as I normally do, which might be a blessing for some people. But we're going to get through the whole thing, and you're going to see as a theme in Fatiha that there's a lot that talks about like us as opposed to just individuals when you're kind of reciting the chapter. Anyone else, how did Eid go, or how was, if you did fast on the day before Eid, it's called the day of Arafah, how was that for you? It can also be difficult, right? It doesn't have to be like super easy. Did anybody do anything super fun on Eid? Yeah.
So there are a few people here that hung out with the converts, the conversations group. And I think the conversations were really fruitful.
Oh, yeah. Where did you guys hang out?
Solo's apartment.
Oh, you went to Solo's house?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
It's really great.
Yeah. Solo's here.
Oh, there you are.
He wasn't invited.
Solo gave the shadiest announcement the night before at Iftar. I was like, Solo, come tell people about the dinner. He's like, we're going to meet someplace in Astoria at some person's house. It's like, it's your house, dude. Why are you talking to the third person about yourself? Nobody knew what he was discussing. Yeah, it was good. It was fun.
Yeah, it was really great. And also just being around others who had similar like, feelings and like wanting to be like accepted in the community and like sharing kind of like struggles, but also like wins, I guess. And,
nice.
It was really lovely.
So we're going to start again soon the monthly brunches at our apartment, my apartment, which is where that's what a lot of the kind of tenor is. It's potluck, people come together, and it's just a space for people who are exploring Islam to speak with people who are recent converts or people who converted a while ago, as well as people who are kind of family members, friends, etc., of people who are in either of those categories. And kind of jumpstart other programs as well. Any other thoughts on Eid, Arafah fasting before we move into what we're going to discuss tonight? Yeah, no? Great. So we wanted to get through the remainder of the first chapter just so people can start to really deepen in the memorization part to it. And then we can start getting into the other aspects of the prayer itself. So in the Hanafi school, which is the legal school that we're looking at, the recitation of Fatiha, the first chapter, is not what's an obligation of the prayer. It's not a fard, it's a wajib, it's a necessary act, right? So for those who are just rebuilding relationship with their faith, people who are new to Islam, there's also a format in just how you can learn the prayer itself and kind of go at a pace that makes sense. So we want to try to get the Fatiha down soon. So if you can really put in some time to memorize it as best as you can, at a pace that makes sense for you. But over the next few weeks, we want to start to get that situated so that we can start going through the other parts and memorizing that well. And like last time, how Kiara gave some tips on what was helpful for her as she was memorizing and transliterating in ways that were more conducive to her own personal kind of memorization. If you have ideas and things, feel free to share that as we kind of discuss. So we looked at the first three verses already.
This doesn't work.
That all speak about like God in some capacity. So the first one says, Alhamdu lillahi rabbil alameen. Does anybody remember what this means? Alhamdulillah, what did that mean?
All praise to God.
Yep. Any other thoughts on the rest of the verse or that word? Yeah.
You did a nice job focusing on Rub, what Rub meant.
What does it mean?
You were talking about, like, in our context, like, our Western context, most people would think it means Lord. Like, you gave a medieval times type of reference, but it, you kind of went into a lot of things. Like, it means much more than that, like, Malik.
Yeah. So, in the interest of time, maybe I'll do, because we haven't met in a couple of weeks, right? It's been 2 weeks since we met. So, Alhamd refers to praise and thanks, right? Because you can praise something without being thankful, and you can thank something without kind of being praising it in some capacity, right? So remember, Giuseppe was here a few weeks ago. He's sick today. He's got a cold. So say a little prayer for him and his healing. But he was wearing this really vibrant sweater. And if I said, wow, that's a nice sweater, I'm not thanking him for wearing the nice sweater. I'm praising the sweater. I was like, thank you for wearing nice clothes to the class, right? But you can thank somebody without praising them and praise somebody without thanking them. Does that make sense? And this combines both. For God, Rabb, as was mentioned, you know, is not just Lord, but it invokes the idea of being a caretaker, a nurturer, one that is kind of in charge, but also making decisions, is an ownership, is the giver of a gift, you know, and blessings. There's a lot that goes into that. And Alameen essentially is everything that is not Rabb, right? So God uniquely is the one that is the Lord of everything, and everything else fits into this category of Alameen. And then verse number 2 said, Ar-Rahman Nir-Rahim. And there's shared roots here. So Rahman is something that means compassionate or merciful, but it's got its own nuance of gentleness, softness, love, mercy. It's not mercy like in a kind of supremacist anti-black system that sees everything in these kind of frames of justice and mercy in that way, right? Because then you're not thinking about it in terms of its element of love or softness or kindness and gentleness. Rahman fits into form that denotes something that is emphatic qualitatively, right? So if someone said, I'm so exhausted, like exhaustion is me, then you'd say, Ana ta'ban, right? If someone said, you know, you're so lazy, right? That laziness is you, you'd say, Anta kaslan, right? You can hear the same kind of sound, Rahman, kaslan, ta'ban. Does that make sense? And it denotes something that's temporary. Because I can be super exhausted, and I can go to sleep, and then I'm not exhausted anymore. Rahim denotes continuity to it, like it keeps going, right? And both are now there as an introduction. The way I asked you all to tell each other, like, who you are, what are your names, how is Eid for you, you chose to self-select to say, this is me, in your introduction. So this is how, in the Quran, God introduces himself to the reader. The very first thing he's saying is, I'm a loving, compassionate God that is watching over you and all of creation. And that's like the introduction that's there. And then the third verse said, Maliki Yawm Middin. The master of the day of judgment,
Right, and we talked about these three in some detail, so we won't go through it all. But these are things that are going to be important as we go into the next few verses. Because the chapter in and of itself has a lot of balance and symmetry to it. And it builds off of the initial verses in the latter part of it. So the next verse, which is a new one that we're looking at, in the fourth verse, it begins, Iyaka na'budu. And the apostrophe is just to indicate the letter Ayn, which we haven't gotten to. And when we get to the end of class, hopefully somebody did something with the letters that we talked about a month ago. And then it says, Wa Iyaka Nesta'in. Can somebody open the translation and read what that fourth chapter of the fourth verse of the first chapter says? In whatever translations you have? Yeah, go ahead.
It is you we worship, and upon you we call for help.
Great. Does yours say the same thing?
You alone we worship.
Yeah, and what's the rest of it say?
You alone we worship, and you alone we ask for help.
Yeah, great. So embedded in this is a couple of different things. The idea here is not framed in an imperative. So when you go through the first three verses, you're just talking about who God is. And if you remember when we talked about the word Rab, we said that it's the kind of word that it denotes a relationship. Like if you're a teacher, then by principles of logic, you have students, right? If someone says you're a husband, then you have a spouse. You're a father, you have children. Does that make sense? You don't have to say, I'm a father of children to say that you have children. Like if I said to you, I'm a father, you're going to assume that I have children, right? So the word Rab denotes that if this is like the word Lord, then you are a Lord over something. Do you know what I mean? And in Arabic, the complementary word for this is Abd. It's got the same letters here, right? Ayn ba'dal Abd, na'budu. So when you're saying Iyaka na'budu, you alone we worship, everything you need to know about who you're worshiping is in those first three verses. Does that make sense? And when it's saying Iyaka na'budu, it's not grammatically in an imperative. The verse doesn't say, worship me, I'm the most merciful and compassionate. Worship me, I'm the master of the day of judgment. It now moves from describing who God is to making an affirmative Iyaka na'budu, that you alone do we worship. Meaning that there's a choice in all of this. Do you see what I'm saying? Does that make sense? That fundamentally, your ability to now determine what it is that you are a worshiper, and this is like a big part of just Islamic doctrine. It gives accountability to an individual through the idea that you get to choose your choices. And so the way the language is structured, it's saying that you alone do we worship, and you're making it as a statement, right? I am worshiping you. I worship you, you who is worthy of all praise and thanks. I worship you, you who is the Lord of everything. I worship you, the most compassionate, the most merciful. I worship you, the master of the day of judgment. But I'm choosing to worship you. You're the only thing that I want to be an abd of. I don't want to be an abd of wealth. I don't want to be an abd of anything in creation. I don't want to be a worshiper of my physical beauty or of materialistic things. I just want to be a worshiper of everything that I know you have helped me to know who you to be. Does that make sense? Now you got to think about this in the frame of that kind of relationship on a human level. If somebody is in a place where they have an individual, an entity, an authoritative body that now determines how you will be, most people don't necessarily end up liking those people, right? Do you know what I'm saying? So it's not always like the most amazing experience that you have with the principal of a school, or elders that tell you what to do or not to do, or engaging in that kind of relationship that has now do's and don'ts and rights and wrongs that are not morally relative. So there's a deep wisdom in being able to understand that when God is introducing himself to you, he's first telling you, like, hey, I'm a God that, like, loves you. And when you're choosing to worship me, don't just worship me as the creator. Because he doesn't say Al-Khaliq in his introduction. He says Ar-Rahman. Like, you can believe that God created everything. That doesn't mean that you believe God is the most merciful or the most compassionate. Does that make sense? And so when you're making this statement, whether you're conscious of it or not, but the idea is to have consciousness, you're making a statement that says, I choose to worship you. I'm not choosing to worship like something else, and I'm also not choosing to worship a skewed understanding of who you are. I'm worshiping who it is that you've told me you are. And these things in these three verses, if you don't know anything else about God from an Islamic doctrinal standpoint, this is all you need to know. There's a reason why it is a chapter that's recited again and again, because it's giving the fundamental foundational understandings that any person who practices this religion needs in order to know who their God is. Does that make sense? Any questions on that so far? We're going to come back to this verse because it's the middle verse. And this chapter is balanced over 7 verses. And this becomes like the center verse that pulls both of the subsequent 3 verses and the previous 3 verses together. There's a connection there. But everything that goes into Na'budu is rooted in these 3 verses. This is who you're worshiping when you say Na'budu. And when you say you alone, it means I'm choosing to worship you actively. It's my choice. Any questions on that? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Then in the latter part of it, you're going to have the same words. Wa means and. Iyaka, only you. Nasta'in, it'll talk about help and aid. Isti'ana in Arabic is a very particular kind of help. Right? It comes from the Arabic word aun. And it's not help that is something like,
an example. Let me try to think of an example that isn't anything terrible.
Like, this is a kind of help that assumes that you're also trying as you're seeking help. Does that make sense? Right? Like, if we came in here, and I was like, guys, can you just stack up the chairs? And everyone's like, yeah. And then I just sat here
and ate all the cookies, right? That's not you helping me in this sense of isti'ana. That's me being lazy and not trying anything. Do you get what I mean? But if I walked in the room and I'm putting down all of the chairs and stacking them up, and then you came and you were like, hey man, you're an old man, right? And I was like, you're right, I can't do this by myself. I just simply don't have the ability to do it alone, you know? Like if I tried to carry this and you saw me struggling with it, right? And I turned to you and I said, can you help me carry this? And it's not that I'm not trying to do it, but I get to a point where I recognize I can't do it without you. That's isti'ana. Does that make sense? And it's very different from other kinds of help. Language is really important when you're reading the Quran, even if you're reading the translation. Because you want to think about words that are there and words that are not there, right? If I'm in such a state of desperation and I'm super run down and I'm just like out of it, and you came and you were like, Khalid, what happened to you? I was like, just help me. Then you might be able to have consideration in that state where it looks like I've been crying a lot, you know, I'm like lost a ton of weight, I clearly haven't been sleeping, and I was just like, help. Then you don't need anything further to qualify the help. Does that make sense? But in most instances, if there is something that I'm asking for your assistance on, I'm going to need to qualify what I'm seeking your assistance on, right? So if I was like, Danish, help me. And he was like, okay. And then we just sat and stared at each other. I'm like, why aren't you helping? He's like, because, stupid, you didn't tell me what to help you with, right? I can't just say help me and not say help me with what. Does that make sense? So you need to have something that is what you're seeking help with, right? Here, there's not anything specific because you're choosing to also understand that you need God's help with everything. There's not a matter that you want to be without a recognition of the assistance of the divine. So you are the only one that I choose to worship, and you're the only one who's going to help me get through all of it. Does it make sense? It sounds a lot different than what the translation says, right? Do you get what I mean? But it's all the same words. You just got to think about it in that way. Iyyaka na'budu wa iyyaka nasta'in. You alone do we worship. Your help alone do we seek. The na in Arabic at the beginning of a verb is denoting that there's like a first person plural, which also now interjects this idea that you're not in it alone. The religion in and of itself is not meant to be something that's a lonely experience. And this is something that can be very difficult for people who convert to Islam. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but when you have sociological tendencies that communities build themselves off of in groups and out groups, we had the program here with Amar Shukri on whatever day last week, right? It was a Tuesday, before Eid on Wednesday. I don't know if any of you came to that. I had stepped out in the beginning, but someone told me he asked people to just like say where they came from, right? To say how diverse it is. And he and I were sitting out here, and Sheikh Amar, I've known him for a long time, and he used to come around here when he lived in New York City. It was a different like number of people. It grows every year, alhamdulillah, the IC. One of the first things he said to me was, look how diverse it is here. And I was like, I know, man, I work here, right? And he was then asking people, what I was told, in the audience, like, where are you from? And people just kept saying different places they were from, right? If this didn't happen, I don't know. I wasn't there, but someone told me it happened. Did it happen? Yeah, yeah. Right? When you have communities that are more culturally hegemonic, or they are connected based off of shared race, shared culture, shared class, it can feel very lonely.
to become Muslim doesn't mean you commit a cultural apostasy, but there is a deep understanding embedded right in the beginning of this that you're not one in this alone, nor should you forget that there's people that are going to be leaning on you too. So in the Na'bud and the Nasta'een, you're saying we collectively. And that's a big we that you got to think about. Even if you look in this room, right? Some of you are Muslim, some of you are not. Some of you are from certain parts of the world, some of you from different parts of the world. There's a lot of diversity just here as a microcosm of what a community of God is supposed to be. Because the paradigm of gatherings that are divine, they're based off of principles of inclusivity, not exclusivity. Right? It's not about keeping people out, it's about letting them in. When I used to work at Princeton, for example, wasn't just Princeton because it had students with a certain SAT score and extracurriculars and GPAs, but Princeton was also Princeton because beyond who it let in, also who it kept out. That's how a lot of human gatherings function, right? How could you invite that person to your house? How can you do this? How can you do that? You're going to let your kid marry this person? Why are you in a relationship with this person? Why are you eating with that person? Right? That's how our relationships quite often get kind of determined, not just about who you let in, but who you keep out. God's gatherings are different from that. Like, truly divine gatherings are meant to be accessible by everyone. Why? Because Allah's majesty is not contingent upon who's present in the gathering. And if anything, when you can be with a broader recognition of a God-centric worldview that centers the divine and removes egocentricity, and then see, like, hey, we're all in this together. It's a very unique kind of perspective that isn't necessarily echoed in many communal experiences. So it's all embedded in this. I'm choosing to worship you, and I'm choosing to turn to you for assistance. Does it make sense? Iyyaka na'budu wa iyyaka nasta'in. And then what we're going to get in the remaining ones, I'm going to go through this just quicker than we normally do, because one, I know I talk a lot, and two, we didn't meet for a couple of weeks, and we want to get through the whole thing. So here's section one. Here is something we can call section two. And then you're going to have the next verse. It says, Ihdina Sirat al-Mustaqim. And you can transliterate it however you want. Ihdina Sirat al-Mustaqim. Here is now the help that you're asking for. Help me. And how is that help? Ihdina. Can someone read the translation that they have? The next verse. Guide us along the straight path. Great. Anything else? Any different translations? Same things? Yeah. So in Arabic, the word for guidance is hidayah. And the word for gift in Arabic is hadiyah. Right? It's got the same letters. Now you think about this, because it's a Arabian desert that these verses are being revealed in. So have any of you ever been in a desert before? Yeah. What's that like?
Terrifying.
Terrifying? Why?
It's dark.
It's dark. Oh, great. Good. And then what happens? Yeah.
Like, camel goes there.
What?
I was in Egypt.
I see. So think about this now. Can you imagine being in that desert with no lights? What would that feel like?
Terrifying.
Right? Because you don't know where to go. Do you understand? So that's why direction in and of itself is a gift in that way. Does that make sense?
So the relationship between guidance and gifts are embedded in this. If you've ever been in a place where it just feels like, I don't know, like in this kind of endless body of water in front of me, in this endless like sea of sand in front of me, right? So that sense of guidance as a gift is something that's there. And again, it's guide us, ihdina. The word sirat in Arabic already refers to a path, but it doesn't refer to a path that is like tiny, right? It's not like this is the path in terms of just how wide it is. The sirat is like wide. Why is that important? Because that means that more than one person can walk on it. Do you understand? It's not like, you know, if you've ever been to an airport or you ever been, I just took my kids to Universal Studios. I don't know if anybody's ever been to Universal Studios before, right? But the crowds are like you're on Hajj in Mecca. Like literally, we went to Nintendo World and you can download an app and get an understanding of like the wait times. To get on one of the rides in Nintendo World, there was a 300-minute wait. It's crazy, right? And when you go through these lines, if you've ever been in an amusement park before, and you're walking through like these kind of set up corridors, because a line that you stand in for 5 hours is gonna have a lot of like turns just to get you to the front of it, right? It's very narrow. That's not what the sirat is. It's expansive, it's wide, so that we can all walk on it together. Does that make sense?
Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. This is already a path that's also like straight. So mustaqim gets translated as straight path, but it's already a straight path then. Does that make sense? So when you remember we talked about the word iqama, when we were talking about prayer, and we said establish the prayer, and I gave you the example that in the word iqama, for iqamatu salah, that you're making the prayer upright, right? So we use the illustration of a tree that's kind of a sapling in New York, that if you've ever walked around, and it's too fragile to stand on its own, so what they do is they take a pole or a stick and they tie the tree around it so that the wind or the rain doesn't knock it down, right? But the pole is helping the prayer to the tree to be upright. And that's like what iqamat as-salah means, like you're making the prayer stand upright, right? And it has the word in it that means standing, like qiyam, right? And Sam was here at that time. And he's like, oh, like qiyamul layl, like we were doing in Ramadan, the standing in the night. Mustaqim has the same letters in that, right? When you stand in prayer, like that's the word for it, standing up. So this is not necessarily about a straight path this way, because the sirat is already straight, but the idea of it being mustaqim is that it's also like raising you up and kind of taking you upwards. There's ascension in it. Does that make sense? You're not like plateaued, but you're moving forward, you know, and upwards. Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. This doesn't also denote that just show it to me. But the Arabic here is giving more of an insight of that gentleness that stems from these like divine names. So it's not just ihdina sirat al-mustaqim, point it out to me, but it's like walk with me through it. It's not just bring me to the initial part of it, but help me along the way and get me to the end. The same way with isti'ana, there's not a word that qualifies what you're seeking help with. Like, think about what it is that you ask for directions for when you're trying to go someplace, right? When people are here for the first time, they'll be like, how do I get to the bathroom? You know? Is there any place I can eat around here? Where can I park my car? You're asking for destinations. Does that make sense? Here, you're not asking for a destination. Here, you're asking for the means to the destination. So the Sirat al-Mustaqim is something that is particular in the sense that once you get on it, then you're just going to go exactly where you need to be. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Just a quick question. This one refers to like the straight path, right? But doesn't the Salat also refers to that, like in the Devil Judgment, don't let me like fumble, just go like the straight path to heaven? Does it refer to that one or like?
It could. So the word like in Arabic for once you go on the Day of Judgment and your actions are judged, there's a bridge that every person walks across called the Sirat. Mm-hmm. And some people are going to walk across it with ease, some with a little bit more trepidation, right? And there's a multitude of things that we can kind of think out here. But quite often this is seen also in terms of this kind of existence. Like, bring me to a place that is going to be qualified by the next two verses a little bit more, what this kind of pathway is. Does that make sense? Yeah. Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. Here now, in your prayer, you're asking for this again and again and again. And so the way that you want to understand it is as a source of also replenishment from the standpoint of like guidance, not in archaic ways, but in tangible ways. The same way you need to have regular hydration to just be. Like, today is hot. You know what I mean? Can you imagine if you didn't drink any water, not today, but for the last 5 days, what would today feel like? You need regular sleep. So what happens when you don't sleep with regularity in a sufficient manner? You need food. So here, you're turning to this on a regular basis, asking for it on a cyclical pattern of the sun, right? Five times a day in your prayer, you're reciting this in every cycle of prayer, saying that, fill me up again with it. I'm going to go back into this place where I don't have to think about so much what I'm putting into my body. I don't have to think about consumption. I just think about feeding my stomach at a very kind of minute level, and everything is about what is materialistic and egocentric. So help me to stay centered. The same way I need to have water with regularity, your spiritual self needs to have hidayah with regularity. You're asking for it again and again and again. It's not just information. A part of it is information, but it's more than that. And this is a difficulty that many people have when they're born into Islam, because you're just given information. And you just memorize it. And you're told, here it is, black and white. And there's not then an opportunity to actually experience it for what it's intended to be. And then the words come out, but there's not presence inwardly. Does that make sense? So here I am beginning to act on what I'm seeking for in this. And the broader kind of frames is going to be twofold around knowledge and action in the chapter. And here is where you have knowledge, and here is now where we're going to get into the parts around action. Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. Then the next verse says, Sirat al-ladhina
an'amta alayhim. What's the translation that you get for that?
Path of those you have blessed.
Is that what you have written somewhere? The path?
Quran, yeah.
Yeah? Great. Anybody have a different translation? Great. Sirat al-ladhina an'amta alayhim. You have the word sirat again. Al-ladhina is a relative pronoun, right? Those, for example, right? So the path of those, an'amta alayhim, that have been blessed by you, that you have blessed them. This is in the past tense, an'amta. So what you're asking for now is narrowing what this means. Walk with me through it. See me till the end. Don't leave me by myself and just point it out to me, right? Which is what a lot of people do. Do you know what I'm saying? Right? My kids and I, we are in a place where the old woman lost, and where do you need to go? And she has no idea. Now we can choose to direct her by saying, that's where you're supposed to be. Or we go out of our way to walk her to where she needs to get to so that she ends up being at the destination. And when my kids say, Baba, why did we walk this person all the way here? Because you don't want to just leave people hanging by themselves, right? And fundamentally because we can, you know? And that's what happens quite often, right? When you think about it on this individual kind of level, when you look for assistance, you're in a place where people pull out a phone more to take pictures rather than help you get up when you fell down on the ground. Or they might say, here's where you can go for assistance of some kind, without thinking out, like, how do I play a role in remedying this inequity, this injustice? You are a survivor of abuse, here's a phone number. You are somebody who doesn't have food, here's this pantry, here's this, here's that. But narrowing it down in a place that says, how do I walk with you through your struggle? How do I, like, come to you? And you're in this place where you're asking for that assistance. Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim, come, just take me through it all until I get to where I'm supposed to be. Sirat al-ladhina an'amta alayhim, that path of those who you have already blessed. Meaning, like, the people who came before me that did it right, I want to be on that same path as them. Those people. The ones who had the receipt of your favor, your ni'mah. And the idea that it's in the past tense gives us this understanding that says that there's already people that I can learn from. The people who did it well, like, help me to do it the way that they did it well. You don't have to, like, start from scratch. You don't have to be in a place where I have to make sense of it all by myself. It's not a religion that says, even if there's a change in your lineage, because you have now chosen to practice a different faith than other people in your family, it doesn't mean you're cut off from your family members, nor does it mean that you have to do everything on your own. But there's connections in an ancestral sense that doesn't necessitate us having to think that I'm the starting point of everything and I can draw upon those that came before me. Sirat al-ladhina an'amta alayhim, I want to be in this category of people. And we're going to introduce three categories of people now that everything in the alameen are going to be broken down into. So you're either in this category, those who they, like, did it right. غير المغضوب عليهم is the next category, category number two. What's the translation you have in your book on this? Yeah.
Not those you are displeased with.
Not those you are displeased with. Anything else?
Not
Yeah.
Those of, not of those against whom there is anger.
Yeah. And that translation is a little bit better. Because here you have an'amta, which is explicitly mentioning God's favor. There's not a word in here that sounds similar to that, right? So what is removed from here is anything that specifically mentions Allah. غَيْرَ الْمَغْضُوبِ عَلَيْهِمْ, like, not those who there is anger upon them. And anger is also not just, like, divine anger, but anger from, like, angels, from friends, from family members, anybody who is looking to you and saying, why aren't you getting it done the way that you can get it done? Why did you choose yourself over the rest of us? Why are you not in a place of consideration that it's much bigger than just me? This category is also distinct here because of this link of knowledge and action. So, an'amta alayhim, people know this, and then they move forward on this act. So if you have the information, the knowledge, and you act upon it, then you are in this group, an'amta alayhim. If you have the knowledge and you don't act upon it, then you're in this place, maghdubi alayhim. Does that make sense? Like, I got two kids, right? Some of you have met my children. They're beautiful, right? Mashallah. Yeah. 7 and 10. They're great. I literally will say to them certain things. And I'll be like, Medina baby, can you make sure that this does not happen? And make sure you also tell Kareem that this should not happen. And then I leave and I come back, and the thing that should not have happened is exactly what's happening. I'm like, what just happened? Then Kareem says, I didn't know, Baba, you didn't tell me. And I look at Medina, she's like, oh, Baba, yeah, I'm sorry, right? I'm not going to get angry at my babies because I love them. But move now away from my beautiful children to people that you interact with on a daily basis. People who work with you, people who are family members that don't do what they're supposed to, people who you've said to, please, X, Y, or Z, and they still act contrary to it. You gave somebody something of yours to look after. You let them borrow something. They didn't use it the way you wanted them to use it. You have somebody who you express to them that this is not something that can happen, or this is something that must happen, and it doesn't happen. And when they don't do what it is that you've explicitly asked them to do or not to do, don't you get angry at them? Like, how come you didn't do this? How come you didn't do that? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? We talked about this. What do you mean that you still went ahead and did it? They knew it, but they didn't do what they were supposed to do with it. Despite knowing, they still decided to do something differently. Does that make sense? That's what this second group of people is. غير المغضوب عليهم. And then the last, says وَلَا الضَّالِينَ. What's the translation you have for that? Yeah.
Nor those who are astray.
Okay. Any other translations?
Misguided?
Yeah. The translations aren't so good, right? وَلَا الضَّالِينَ are just people who are lost. These are people who act and don't have knowledge. Like, they're doing things without knowing, like, what they're doing. There's no base to it. And these are, like, bigger questions that empirically you can't necessarily have answers to unless you reflect deeply upon them, right? Someone can tell you how certain things are the way that they are. They might be able to answer the question of what. They might even be able to answer the question of when.
But they're not always going to be able to answer the question of why so well. Does that make sense? And when you're in this place of trying to make determinations on some of these things, if you were to ask yourself, why do you do most of the things that you do? What would be like the fundamental reason most people have for this? It's just, well, that's how the people around me do it, or that's how the people that came before me did it. This is why Islam is not an inherited religion, and it has a discursive theology where you have to be able to explain, like, why you're Muslim. And it's not because my dad was Muslim, or my grandfather was Muslim, or my grandmother was Muslim. But walad dalin is people who essentially, they're just in this place of kind of, they're lost, right? They're acting without knowledge. Does that make sense? And these three frames here are what's rooted in this, right? So these are people who they know that Allah is who He tells you He is, and then they do something with that. These are people who they know it, but they still don't do anything with it. And then these are people who they don't know it, and they're in this place of still trying to like do their best. And what this chapter is telling us is all of this, alameen, is going to, on a human level, fit into one of these three groupings of people. Does that make sense? And when you're choosing, إِيَّاكَ نَعْبُدُ وَإِيَّاكَ نَسْتَعِينَ, you're fundamentally saying, I want to be in a place where I fit into box number one. Right? And it's not easy. That's why there's a repetitive kind of nature to it. Because there's so many things that are competing for control of your psyche, for control of your emotions, for control of who you are in your entirety, that you need to buy this, you need to eat this, you need to do that. And the beauty of it is, in this religion, when you can understand, like, God is the most merciful, the idea isn't that your pursuit is perfection. The idea is just, you're just going to try your best. There's going to be a lot of things that people do differently because the sirat is expansive. So it means that everybody that's walking on it is not going to look exactly the same. People's struggles are going to be different. How they relate to religion is going to be different. There's going to be some people who they have challenges with certain things that other people find ease with. There's going to be some people who have ease with certain things that other people find challenges with. There's going to be some things that are going to be very just amazing as an experience. There's going to be some things that are going to be very hard, and some things that fundamentally are just beyond comprehension in some capacity. But you got to just keep going back to these kind of points, right? And if anybody tells you, well, how do you know? Was because that's what Allah says. He tells you who He exactly is right in the beginning. And He helps you to understand that, hey, there's going to be something like bigger than this that comes in store. So don't just be in a place where this world is the sole pursuit. Muslims read this chapter at a minimum 17 times a day. And the notion is that you keep coming back to it, not just rotely, but there's going to be meaning that stems from it that's applicable as you continue to have your own growth forward in your life. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense? Okay. What I want us to do, because I know we just did a lot, is to take a pause. You can turn to the person next to you. What are you taking away so far from this? What's kind of sticking out to you? And we can kind of talk for a bit, and then we'll come back and discuss. But go ahead.
Okay, so what are some of the things that are sticking out for people? What are you taking away so far? What sticks out?
Just
to you. Yeah.
And what we choose to do. And the past few weeks we've been talking a lot about intention. So it's kind of special to me that it's like right dead center in Al-Fatihah with all of this stuff that we've been talking about and setting intention in prayer and setting intention before fasting and all the things that us as Muslims do. Like, it's interesting that it's, yeah, just reiterates the importance consciousness and our choices and our intentions.
Yeah, amazing. And if you only had to do it once and then that sufficed, then that's it. But the idea is that some days it's going to be a little harder to hold on to. Some days it's going to be a little easier. That's okay, right? It's just part of the process. But you're kind of affirming the idea. That's what you want to see it as. As you're reading these words, you're seeing them in a very affirmative kind of voice, you know? The way that you're in this place where you're, if you've ever played sports, it's not a great analogy, but so much of it is a mental exercise, right? People who really succeed are the ones who are not just physically talented. You need physical talent, but you also be able to be in a place where you're mentally, like, on top of things, right? And how does that come into existence? You know, people build that focus through self-talk. And that's why we're doing this in the way that we're doing it. This is what I said in the very first class, right? Like, if I was talking to you in a language that none of you spoke, then, like, you wouldn't be able to maintain focus, right? This is under the category of khushu' that we were talking about, having, like, presence and focus in your prayer. You want to know what it is. And even if you don't know the words by word, because you can memorize the translation, it doesn't mean that it means something to you. You know what I mean? Right, so you want to like think and reflect, like, what does this mean? What does it mean that I get to choose what I'm actually a worshiper of? What does it mean that I'm actually in a place where I'm choosing what I rely on for assistance? Do you know? And on the other end of this is the paradox to decision making, that when you don't choose, you've still made a choice. Like, you're still worshiping something right now, whether you want to admit to it or not. There's something that you are a worshiper of. And there's things that you turn to for assistance. Some of those things might be helpful, but some of those things also just give complacency and not contentment. Do you know what I mean? What else? What else are we taking away from this? Yeah.
To that point, we were talking about how I once read these commentators who talked about how Al-Fatiha is sort of like the Quran in a nutshell, because it gives you the qualities of God and your relationship to God, and then our role and place in the world vis-a-vis the place of other people. And we were talking about how it's so grounding, in part because you, most of us don't have the time to like read the Quran every single day. So when you need that little boost, or, you know, that little foundation to be like very firm for you, having that ability to just like repeat to yourself, okay, this is what I'm grounding myself in, it just gives you that nutshell that really walks you through everything that really Islam is in a nutshell. And like, inshallah, you also make the time to engage with the rest of it. But just having that practice as you sort of like that maintenance of your soul, it really gives you sort of like that access point into all of the different parts of Islam.
Yeah, and then when you ask for it, you got to be ready for it to be answered. Do you know? So if you're saying, ihdina sirat al-mustaqim, like, guide me to this, then not only do you keep your eyes open, and not just your physical eyes, but your spiritual eyes, but you're also in a place where you're conscious of what you're asking for, and then you're ready for when it actually comes to you in a gradual pace, right? Like, I'm saying the words. Do you know what I mean? And if I'm not present inwardly, it doesn't mean that I'm still not asking for something, you know? And it doesn't have to be like a constant reiteration of reading like hundreds of pages of something. It's all just embodied in the initial part to it.
that is purposely easy to access as you get the hang of it, because everything you need is just right there, you know? Makes sense? You're going to say something?
We spoke a little bit about the distinction between three levels, action with knowledge, knowledge without action, and action without knowledge. And it made me think about like what manifests in societies where each different energy level is dominant. So society where it's just action without knowledge, society where it's knowledge with inaction, and society when both are present. And like the fruits of the societies, what war might look like, what community services may look like, what social services may look like. That's what came to mind.
Yeah. If you're at Jummah on Friday, how many of you were here for Jummah on Friday, right? We talked about Supreme Court rulings and these kinds of things. The country is in a place where it capitalizes off of people fitting in these two boxes. Like, very purposely. You know that it's wrong what they're doing, but you're still not doing anything about it, right? Or you're in a place where you have become now submissive to a system that purposely creates ignorance within you. And you're still out there living your life every day. It doesn't want you to know how it is to be a black person living in the United States. So it erases entire narrative, and you're still acting on certain things. Or when it makes it undeniable in your face, and you know that that's what's happening, but you still like sit back and do nothing. Why wouldn't that be something that incurs anger? Why would God be happy with somebody not doing something with the information that they have? Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? And you don't want to like simplify this to things that become like arbitrary metrics of religiosity. Good religion should bring its practitioner to take on societal ailments. And if it doesn't, then what's the point of religion? So there's a ton of people in a pre-Islamic Mecca and Arabia who they see all kinds of horrendous things going on. They still don't do anything about it, right? Ihdina sirat al-mustaqim, right, is not in a vacuum, but it's ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, maliki yawm al-din, ihdina sirat al-mustaqim. I'm going to stand in front of you on the Day of Judgment. What am I doing with the skills that you gave to me? What am I doing with the credentials, the talents? What am I doing with it? Why is it important? Because there's going to be people who take this beautiful religion and they're going to reduce it to something that makes no sense. And they're going to have you potentially walking on eggshells when you're supposed to walk with empowerment and strength. I don't need anybody but you. It's meant to be like an empowering statement, not one that has you like paralyzed, right? And you want to think about it in tangible, practical ways, because there's a lot of people who we know that they take what they know and they act upon what they know. And there's a bunch of people who they know it's wrong and they still allow for certain things to perpetuate. And then there's a bunch of people who they just don't know anything. They've not been privy to certain information. Erasure of narratives, right? The victors are the ones that get to tell you what history is. Do you see what I'm saying? This can't just be about ritual and practice. It's not just about memorization of a verse. That's not what knowledge is, right? Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense? And so on Friday, that's what we were talking about, right? I was talking about the affirmative action like decision. And what does that mean? And what does it mean to us, right? And it all fits into this. Do you get what I'm saying? And why would I want to be in the group that decided to do this? You know? Or why would I want to be in the group that's heedless of it? Do you get what I'm saying? Does that make sense? That's what you're asking for when you're making this dua, this prayer, right? Don't let me be like that. Let me be like the people who they just did what was right because it was the right thing to do. You know? Does that make sense? Other takeaways before we pause? Yeah.
Speaking about the last thing you mentioned, the blessing and reciting Fatiha for a minimum of 17 times a day is you get to recite Ihdinas Sirat al-Mustaqim. It's a dua you make for yourself 17 times in a day. And it's something to always look forward to, and it's also something that you should say sincerely because it's for your own sake, right? It's for your own good. So I think that's just something, that's a blessing that it's mandatory for us to say a dua for ourselves 17 times in a day.
Yeah, right? God's telling you it's okay for you to love yourself. It's okay for you to pray for yourself. It's okay for you to pray for others included within that. But you can make dua for you. Does that make sense? Right? What are you going to say?
I had a technical question. So ayah 3, Yom Deen. So Yom Day Deen, Day of Judgment. But I also thought Deen meant religion or faith. Is there like a difference between?
Deen can mean, it's like how words can mean various things, right?
Right.
Like I could live in a house. Or I could house people, right? You know, you can utilize terms in different ways. The base of this is essentially an idea that is evoking foundational theologies in Islam. So Meccan society doesn't believe in an afterlife. And this is one of the theologies that are distinct from Islamic doctrine and a Meccan doctrine. And this is what makes religions different from each other, is the theologies are different. So it's a very pure monotheism, Islam, that says the only one worthy of praise and thanks is one God. And there's also a day that you're going to stand in front of God. Right? These are two things that then bleed into this idea that I choose to worship what I worship because what you're being in account for is your choices. Do you see how it flows? Right? So here, like, you have a word like deen that doesn't mean religion in the way that we understand religion to be, but more like a way of life, right? And it's rooted in this idea because, like, your lifestyle is essentially a philosophy on life is what's going to inform your choices. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, so why don't we take a pause here? It's 7:30, 7:29. If you haven't, try to memorize as much as you can, but aside from memorizing it, just go home and like read the words and reflect on them. What does it mean? Allow for yourself to engage it. You know, my kids, they memorize some Quran, but their capacity is limited by virtue of their age. You know, you have a lot more innate and experiential skills then you might recognize, and one of those is the capacity to actually contemplate. So what do these things mean to me? What does it mean, like some of the things that we're discussing? And then next week, we will start to like more in pairs, try to help each other with memorization. So for those of you who've already memorized this chapter, like great, be here to help someone else. For those of you who are just starting out, we're going to, at the end of like the next couple of weeks, have everybody know all of it, inshallah, God willing. And we'll move on to next week talking about some of the actual requirements for the prayer, what those things are, and memorizing other parts to it based off of like what's obligatory, what's like necessary, and what's recommended, you know? Yeah. Yeah, we'll get through some of those things. Yeah, starting next week. But we want to simultaneously start to memorize, you know? And then if you haven't already, we did 4 letters, right? Alif, ba, ta, tha. Has anybody practiced any of those 4 letters? And the ways, I know some of you did, I saw them. You did? How was it? Yeah? Did you find any in the Quran? Did you look for them in the Quran? Yeah? And how was that? Yeah.
Because they don't, like, they look alike, but I know that the fa does not connect.
Yeah.
So it's not a connector, but I think it's just, I need to keep seeing it in the Quran written out so that
yeah.
I can recognize it more easily.
Yeah, and that's why all of the letters are essentially within all of the letters, you know? That's good. No, it's still good. So next week we'll start with that. I'll bring photocopies of some sheets. I know some of you have books also. Bring a pencil if you can. Otherwise, I'll bring the crayons and colored pencils we used the other day. So that we can start going through more of the letters as well, because it'll help in kind of just your engagement overall with some of these things. Okay, sounds good. So we'll see everybody next Wednesday. Thank you. Thank you.